Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
The stars. We have all the stars.
They're not really simple things. They're just pretty amazing.
I reckon it's the most enticing culture that you could ever learn.
Having a yarn. Good to have a yarn. And I like talking, so.
Outback Out Loud from Walgett.
Check out these stories from our community.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
My favourite things about Walgett is reliving memories and telling stories to my children about how I grew up in Walgett.
It's the people, it's... When you have a good season, it's the land.
My favourite thing about Walgett is because we're a small town, we care for each other openly and honestly.
And you've got a beautiful lifestyle. You're not stuck in traffic jams every day of the week. You know, and everyone's very friendly. Like, and you do great things on weekends.
I am so lucky to live in a small town but surrounded by an amazing bunch of people that get in, get things done.
Living out on the reserve. Growing up there.
My name's Gary Trindle. I was born at Narrabri. I left school at 12 years old. Couldn't read and write. And no sense in staying there and putting up with what I was putting up with. And, you know, back when I went to school, they had a class that at school they used to call it OA. But the OA became Aboriginals only. That's why, one of the reasons why I left. I said to Dad, I said, that's it, I'm going, I can't put up with it. So away we went, and the first thing that happened to me was we had a mob of sheep on the road between Collarenderbry and Narrabri, and Dad, give me a book. He said, here, read that. I said, Dad, you know I can't read. He said, you read, there's a word you don't know, read the first word, read the second word. If you can't work it out, come and see me and I'll tell you what the word is. And that's how I learned to read. 3 months we were on the road driving. It took me 3 months to learn to read that book, but now I can read it in probably a day. So, and that's how I learned to read. And I was never, ever behind the eight ball when it come to maths. I used to pay 120, 200 men out of my head when I was cotton gymming. Add it up, work it out. Never be a cent out, so, you know, math was never my problem. I can count 1,000 head of cattle, I can count 10,000 head of sheep, all that sort of stuff. But it was reading and writing that had me. My worst memory was every time I seen a car, I used to have to duck behind a tree or something because I thought it was the welfare department going to take me as a stolen generation, but they never caught me. I must have been able to run fast back then, though, so. They were told if you were at full blood or you were a creamy, that's what they call a creamy, if you were a creamy, they took you because they tried to breed the Aboriginal blood out. With my family, immediate family, we can't be because our mother was Irish and American Negro. And our dad was Aboriginal. His mother was Aboriginal and his father was Aboriginal, but not full blood. But we're part of the Gamilaroi Nation, but we're Gamilaroi people. Came to Walgett in 86. I came here for a fortnight's work. I met my wife. I can remember the day that I met her, I can remember the first time I seen her, but she can't remember me. I was standing in front of the Oasis. I come out here for a fortnight's work with the silos. I just busted up my first marriage and been about 12 months, I suppose, we busted up and came out here and I come into town to get some food and she was walking across the street. And I'll tell you the exact words I said. I went, this could be a good time. I didn't realise it was going to be a long time and might have kept going. 40 years later, I'm still there. It turned out to be up and down as gold, as far as I'm concerned. We got two kids. We read my two kids, her four, and our two together. On top of that, we were registered foster parents, but we would have probably had anything up to 200 kids that we practically read through our house. If you talk to any kids sort of from 45 down to about 34, in this town, they'll nearly all tell you that they spent time at our house or lived at our house at some time. When I first joined the police in 88, I kicked off the Walgett Boxing Club. We had seven New South Wales champions, two runner-ups in New South Wales, an Australian champion and two runner-ups in Australia out of Walgett Boxing Champions. When I was with the police, I had the only accredited cultural competency training outside of Goulburn Academy. I went in there as a community leader, but I also went in there and I had to break down the barriers with the police because the police had a very, very bad stigma. I finished up in the 17 years that I was with the New South Wales Police. In 2006, I applied for the job with Aboriginal Legal Service and I got that, and I've been a field officer with the Aboriginal Legal Service from July 2006 to last Friday, the 12th of March, when I resigned. I think that we have a worse situation now than what we had back in the early days. That's not only with police, that's with teachers, that's with nurses, that's with ambulance officers, that's with community people, you name it. We have the worst. Because if somebody's out there racist, that's very, very racist. Back in the olden days, they showed it, and you knew who you could trust and who you couldn't. These days, they can't show it because they can be held accountable, and it creates a major problem because when they can't show that they're racist, you don't know who's racist. You don't know who, and excuse my French, but you don't know who's pissing in your pocket for the benefit of trying to get something against Aboriginal people. You can be whatever you want to be if you want to push. Like you take me, like a bloke that left school, couldn't read and write, could not read and write, but yet I've had 31 years with the law. I've achieved bravery citations from four of them from the New South Wales Police. I've got certificates of appreciation from the Aboriginal Legal Service. You can achieve whatever you want to achieve. I'll share my culture with anyone and everyone that wants to know it. I love my culture. I love teaching it. I love being the elder of my family. I'm not an elder in this town. I'm an elder of my family, and I represent my family. We go out pig catching on the weekend, and I take my daughters and their kids and their husbands, and we go out on the weekend, and nothing makes me grow prouder than three generations of Trindles in a paddock catching pigs. But the thing is, it's not to do pig catching, it's to teach them culture. Have them out on country, teaching them what the country's about. Showing them the Boree fire, showing them what a coolman is, showing them what a coffin tree is, showing them what a canoe tree is, showing them where they made spears, where they made boomerangs, all this sort of stuff. That's what my culture is. And I'll show that to anyone. I don't care whether they're black, white, red, or correctly round. I'll show it to them because I believe in it. I reckon it's the most enticing culture that you could ever learn.
Check out the ladies from Walgett Knitting Group. We decided we'd have a knitting group. We'd have a cup of tea, and then they decided we'd have lunch too. So we had lunch and a cup of tea. We knit for charities. We send away big parcels of things when we send them. What a lovely lot of letters of thank you and gratitude to for our knitting.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's a lovely group.
And we look forward to it. I was asked to come along. I was new in back in Walgett, I should say. Didn't know many people anymore, so I was asked to come along and help
them.
I suffer from depression, so it helps with that.
I've only been here for 14 months, and then COVID struck, and after COVID died away, Robin got on to me about joining the knitting club. I used to knit years ago when I had the kids, my husband's jumpers, my jumpers, and then I learned to crochet, and that was the end of the knitting.
Me, I do a little bit of everything. I can't follow a crochet pattern. I make it up as I go along. But I knit, give me a knitting pattern and I might. Toys, I love knitting toys. You're creating a little person in a way, and I love it.
Robin can knit anything. you wanted your shoe to be knitted, shoe like what you've got on, she'd be able to knit it. We get sidetracked sometimes.
Yes. There's more natter than knitting, but...
But we get down to the job. Yeah.
We also knit for the show, or sew, or whatever. Yeah.
Knitting, crocheting, sewing, embroidery, handicrafts. If you were a champion of the knitting category, you'd get a...
It might be a
lovely bowl, or it might be a rug, or it might be a something.
Donated by people.
Yeah.
And a ribbon.
And then all the firsts are taken out of the knitting section, say, and put together, and the judge then picks the champion piece out of it. The judge's decision is final, and no correspondence will be entered into. Well, my mother taught me to knit, and as a matter of fact, it was a rainy day like this. And I must have said to Mum I was bored. And I was at Bendine, I can remember where it was, on the front bedroom, and she got out the knitting needles on the bed, and I knitted.
My grandmother taught me to knit, and we could not... she would cast the stitches on, and we had to do the band, and then she'd count, of course it had to be a certain amount of rows, and if we made a mistake, she'd just pull the needles out and we had to pick the stitches up.
Cruel. He was a boy. He was one of seven kids. His mother couldn't knit, and he used to get second-hand jumpers and that, and pick them and knit them up again. He sat there and he taught me how to knit. And the first thing I knitted was a scarf. It had more holes in it than this, but my father loved it and he wore it religiously every day.
Here's a group of women talking about the early days in Walgett.
I loved growing up over in Inway as a kid. I went fishing with my grandmother. We did a lot of things as kids when we were little, mud fights, sneaking down the river, swimming, go crayfishing. My father was a shearer. He used to bring a lot of lamb tails home for all the kids. We'd make a big bonfire and throw all the lamb tails in the fire. Oh, make me want to cry. It was good, really, really good. I just enjoyed myself as a kid growing up over in Nimoy.
Well, these two old Christian people, they used to come to Nimoy every year. I don't know if they went to Gindi or not, but they used to come to Nimoy every year. And we knew when they were coming, we were told. And they were old church Christian people. And we cleaned the back up of Nimoy. Remember that hill? We made the oval?
Yeah.
And we played sports on there. And we'd fill the socks with bushes or leaves, make a ball. And then when we finished playing sports, we did entertainment thing for them. Our cubby house, we turned it into a platform. And I tell my kids a story, I said, the first lot of music I heard, I said, was a 45 and a 78 record. I said, guess who my famous singer was? And they'd say, and they were saying rock and roll stuff, rock. No, Slim Dusty. Because me and Patty sang a song for this old couple, on a platform. That was Slim Dusty's song.
It's changed a long time ago when I was still in high school. I'm going from Tin Humpies to a house that's been built on stilts. My life on Nimoy upbringing was strict. It was happy-go-lucky, a lot of things to do. Nimoy was a big playground.
We made our own play when we were kids. We didn't need money. We just all got together and played together. We went down to the chip and thought it was Big W's, and we had our own football oval that we gathered trophies and had a presentation with all my little cousins. We didn't have much, but we made fun of what we had in them days. And it was hard, but we made fun living in them days.
We go over, we used to have Christmases over there, have mud fights, and it was just big family gatherings. When we finished that, we'd go to the Barwon Inn, and we'd all the community would meet out there after Christmas dinner and everything. And yeah, we'd just have a big, like a community, swim and whatever.
We lived in Chinumpies, now they've changed to houses on stilts and houses around the Walgett community. It's not like, it's changed in a way for our kids because back in our day we weren't allowed up the street. No matter what time of the day or night it was, we weren't allowed.
My first memory of Lightning Ridge was all these very different landscapes with all the big heaps of rocks everywhere and open shops and people pulling out very valuable stones just out of their pockets. I couldn't believe it. I've never seen anything like it. And then they put a value on there and you just get nervous for them because you think, what if they're going to lose it? Even though I am a city person, I love life in Lightning Ridge. It's really versatile. In the season, we have people from all over the world coming to our quite small country town, so you don't actually have to move to get that constant flow of different people. I met incredible people over the last 15 years, in particular, super strong women. I got get into so many different parts of life, as in hobbies, as in things I've learned. I don't think I would have come across that in a big city where I've lived in Germany before. So I find life very, very interesting in Lightning Ridge. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Lightning Ridge was a very slow, sleepy sort of a place. Then in the late 50s, a lot of people of different nationalities mainly came from Andamooka and Cooper Pedy in South Australia, the apple fields over there, and you know, things started to move a lot there, and there was sort of more machinery used with the opal buying, with the opal mining rather, and at that stage the bore water was put onto the town. The town had no water. The electricity came and the bitumen road came part of the way, and you know, they sort of gravelled other parts on the bitumen road, so that made such a difference to Lightning Ridge and made people come there. But I can remember in the 1940s my father used to have American tourists, and they used to come up there on a bus on that dirt road. I don't know how they did it, just had a look around. We used to go down mines. Like when I was a child, they had the windlass. It's got a barrel and they wind a handle and winds a rope up and down that lets the bucket goes down and pulls up the dirt. Well, when I was a child, they used to have cowskin buckets. That's what they were made out of, cowskin. And Dad used to put us in those and let us go down. Yeah, wind us down. But we also had a rope around our waist. He wouldn't let us in a bucket to go down otherwise. See, opal's in special dirt. It's different sort of dirt. And, you know, it could be that thick and it could be this thick. It could be as high as that, you know, the dirt. So in those old days, seeing they had no mechanical things to take it out, they used to just follow the opal dirt and take it. And other places, you had to crawl along on your tummy to get in with a candle. I had a brother that I remember, he were down there with all these American tourists, and he went around and blew out all the candles. Oh no, it's dark down there and there's no light.
Thanks for listening to Outback Out Loud.
Catch you next time.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history.
Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. Over 100 recordings were made. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.